There is something in the world more important than oil, but no country has built a strategic reserve for it. This thing is fertilizer. Without synthetic fertilizer, the Earth cannot support a population of over 4 billion. There are currently 8 billion people living on Earth. Everyone has been watching oil prices these past few weeks, but if oil prices rise, you can drive less. If food prices rise, can you eat less? At this very moment, 35% of the world's urea, 25% of ammonia, and 45% of sulfur are stuck in the Strait of Hormuz, unable to get out. American farmers' fertilizer costs for this year's spring planting are up 25%, and urea prices have risen over 70% in 90 days. The spring planting window for the Northern Hemisphere is only a few weeks. If it passes, it's not just a partial harvest, it's an entire year lost. In today's video, I will break down this crisis chain that everyone is ignoring, from fertilizer to food to your supermarket bill, and bring you to understand the food, or rather, fertilizer, crisis in one go. Before we start, a few words. Occasionally people in the comments section say this channel just peddles anxiety. I ask with a clear conscience, have you actually watched my content? The headlines are indeed eye-catching, but have you come to look? Which episode does not use real data and real sources? Which episode does not give you concrete action plans and observation indicators? The stock market crashes, oil prices skyrocket. Do you think I can cause that just by typing a few words in the comments? What I can do is lay out the data for you before things happen to help you prepare in advance, rather than being a Monday morning quarterback after the fact. So, to the friends leaving such comments, if you think I'm right, please speak up for me in the comments. Enough nonsense, let's take a look. First, let's clarify a basic question. How important is fertilizer anyway? Many people think fertilizer is just for farming and has nothing to do with city dwellers. This idea is completely wrong. In 1918, a German chemist won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry. He invented a method to turn nitrogen in the air into ammonia and then make fertilizer. This method is called the Haber-Bosch process. No need to memorize the name, just remember one number. Scholars have estimated that without this technology, the world's food production could only support about 4 billion people. Now there are 8 billion people on Earth, which means that for every two of us, one is alive because of synthetic fertilizer. This is not an exaggeration, it is basic agricultural science. The rice, bread, milk, eggs, and pork you buy in the supermarket can all be traced back to fertilizer, because the feed for livestock is also grown using fertilizer. The milk you drank this morning, the corn the cow ate came from fertilizer. The chicken cutlet you had for lunch, the beans the chicken ate, the soybeans, also came from fertilizer. Synthetic fertilizer is the foundation of the entire modern food industry. Remove this foundation, and more than half of the items on supermarket shelves would disappear. What are the raw materials for fertilizer? Modern agriculture relies on three main things: nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium fertilizer. You don't need to memorize these technical details. You only need to know one thing. Producing nitrogen fertilizer requires vast amounts of natural gas. Natural gas is both the raw material and the energy source, accounting for 70% to 90% of production costs. Producing phosphorus fertilizer requires sulfur and phosphate rock, while potassium fertilizer requires mining. Every single one is directly tied to energy prices and relies on cross-border supply chains. If natural gas prices rise, fertilizer prices rise. If the supply chain breaks, the fertilizer supply stops. It's that simple and direct. Okay, keep this premise in mind. Now, let me ask you a question. Is there a strategic reserve for oil? Yes, we've discussed this before. Globally, IEA member countries combined have 1.4 billion barrels in strategic oil reserves. In mid-March, they released 400 million barrels, the largest release in history. Is there a reserve for food? Yes, China has the world's largest food reserves, and the US has strategic food reserves too. But what about fertilizer? None. No country in the world maintains a strategic reserve of fertilizer. The chief economist of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization once said, to paraphrase, that while we have oil reserves, there is no international strategic reserve mechanism for fertilizer. The US situation is more specific. The US fertilizer system is a typical, just-in-time, model, meaning just-in-time delivery. Fertilizer distributors don't stockpile. They only move goods from ports when the spring planting season arrives. An economist from the Fertilizer Institute put it plainly, there is nothing stored on the shelves. We are inherently a just-in-time supply industry. This structure is not a problem during peaceful times. Ships unload, and goods arrive. But once the global supply chain has issues, there is no buffer to withstand the shock. If oil is cut off, 1.4 billion barrels of strategic reserves can hold us over. If food is cut off, granaries can help. But fertilizer is the crucial link connecting energy and food. Once the supply is broken, there is no buffer. It's like a chain where the two ends are protected, but the thinnest middle part is exposed. And right now, fertilizer is breaking. We talked in detail about the situation in the Strait of Hormuz in a previous video, so I won't go into detail here. You just need to know one key fact. Since Iran announced the closure of the Strait of Hormuz to commercial shipping in early March, About one-fifth of the world's oil and natural gas transportation has been cut off. It must have been during a speech in Australia last week that a very strong statement was made. This is the largest supply disruption in the history of the oil market, more severe than the 1973 and 1979 oil crises combined. What many people don't know is that it's not just oil being blocked in the Strait of Hormuz. About 34% to 35% of the world's trade in urea, the most used nitrogen fertilizer, needs to pass through this strait. About 25% of global ammonia exports also take this route, and about 18% of diammonium phosphate, another important phosphate fertilizer, is exported from here too. These figures were provided by the CEO of Key Trade, the world's largest fertilizer trader, in an interview in mid-March, stating, "These are extremely huge quantities, and they cannot be replaced from anywhere else in the world." For instance, a single company in Qatar supplies 14% of the world's urea, and Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Kuwait, and Iran itself are major fertilizer exporters. Now, all these ships cannot get out. According to calculations by data analytics firm Clair, if the blockade continues, about one-third of global fertilizer trade will be directly affected. You might say one-third sounds like a lot, but it's not everything. The remaining two-thirds are still operating normally. True, because there is a deeper issue, and that is raw materials. The Gulf countries don't just export finished fertilizers, they also export large amounts of natural gas and sulfur, which are raw materials for other countries to produce fertilizers. You can think of the Gulf region as the raw material warehouse for the global fertilizer industry. If the warehouse is locked, not only can the inventory not come out, but factories all over the world also have nothing to process. The most typical example is India. India is one of the world's largest fertilizer consumers, but the natural gas for many of its fertilizer factories is imported from the Gulf region, such as Qatar. With the natural gas cut off, the factories shut down production directly. In a report on March 20th, NPR interviewed a researcher in New Delhi who said that some fertilizer factories in India and Pakistan have completely stopped production. The situation in Bangladesh is even more tense. They recently made an emergency purchase of a shipment of liquefied natural gas at a price exceeding $28 per million BTUs, a price nearly triple the market price last month. Pakistan simply suspended the purchase of liquefied natural gas altogether because they cannot afford it. As for Egypt, they originally had an outlet, importing natural gas from Israel to make fertilizer, but now the war has affected Israel's natural gas export facilities, cutting off this route too. Egypt has no choice but to go to the international market to buy LNG, whose price has soared. So, you see, it's not as simple as one-third being blocked. It's one-third directly cut off, plus a massive amount of indirect production shutdowns. The global fertilizer supply chain is undergoing a systematic contraction. Fertilizer production has a key difference from oil. Oil can be rerouted from one source to another in days because tankers are moving everywhere globally. But once a fertilizer plant stops, restarting it requires time for adjustments, a stable return of natural gas supply, and heavy logistics. This cycle is calculated in weeks, not days. In other words, even if the Strait of Hormuz miraculously opens, it will take at least 4 to 6 weeks for fertilizer supply to return to normal levels. And the spring planting season cannot wait 4 to 6 weeks. This part is quite significant. If you find it useful, please give it a like and bookmark it to review later. All right, the next question is very practical. What happens if fertilizer supplies are cut off? What happens to your supermarket? Let's first share two true stories. First, there is a farmer named T in Gibson County, Tennessee, whose family has farmed for three generations, growing corn, soybeans, and wheat. This year, his fertilizer costs are $100,000 more than last year, a 40% increase. When interviewed by PBS, he said something that I think perfectly represents the current mindset of American farmers. "For the past 2 years, we've had consecutive record losses. We were already struggling to survive, and now with fertilizer prices rising, it's just the worst possible timing." Quote. Second, in Saskatchewan, Canada, there is a farmer named David who bought his urea last December, so he was considered lucky. He calculated for Reuters that if he bought it today, the same amount would cost him an extra $44,000 Canadian dollars, about $32,000 US. And for some neighbors, it's not just about paying more. They simply can't buy it at all. His broker told him local fertilizer dealers have stopped quoting prices entirely. Why stop? Because they don't know the price of their next shipment themselves. When you don't know your cost, you can't set a retail price, so you have to close up shop and wait. This is not an isolated phenomenon. The president of the American Farm Bureau Federation wrote a letter to the president, which included a key assessment. If the transportation and supply of critical agricultural inputs like fertilizer are not prioritized, the United States faces the risk of reduced food production. This is not just a food safety issue, it's a national security issue, and it will put inflationary pressure on the entire U.S. economy. Frankly speaking, the fertilizer situation in the U.S. is roughly this: a shortage of about 25%, prices soaring where inventory exists, and Middle East exports have risen from about $500 a ton to over $700 a ton, an increase ranging from 40% to 60%. Urea prices have surged over 70% in 90 days. In some places, you can't buy it even with money, and the spring window is right now. Fertilizer can't be used just any time. It must be applied to the soil before crops grow. If you miss the optimal time window, it's useless for now. Shipping from the Gulf to New Orleans takes weeks. Then it needs to be transferred to barges and trucks to reach Midwestern farms. Plus, shipping insurance rates are skyrocketing, and fewer ships are willing to run this route. If it arrives too late, this batch of fertilizer is useless for the 2026 season. The time window is very tight. Every day of delay might mean another field planted with insufficient fertilizer. Seeing this truly sends chills down my spine. Remember those Davos depopulation plans for 2030 or 2035? We cannot elaborate on this right now. Perhaps another time. What are American farmers doing in the face of this situation? What is Washington doing? First, farmers are forced to change crops. The USDA's mid-February forecast projects 2026 corn acreage will drop from last year's 99 million acres to about 93-94 million, a decrease of 5 to 6 million acres. Why? Because corn is fertilizer intensive, and fertilizer costs per acre have soared to about $166. Farmers, already suffering four consecutive years of losses, cannot bear this. What are they switching to? Soybeans. Soybeans are legumes with nitrogen-fixing bacteria in their roots, so they don't need much extra nitrogen fertilizer, making them far less sensitive to fertilizer prices. The USDA forecasts soybean acreage will increase by 3.8 million acres, but here lies the problem. Switching crops last minute isn't that simple. The National Corn Growers Association said it best. Planting starts immediately. You want to switch from corn to soybean seeds? The seed supply itself is an issue. Can you just buy seeds a week before planting? Farming doesn't work that way. As for Washington, skyrocketing fertilizer prices have become a political topic in Congress. Missouri Senator Hawley asked the Justice Department to investigate if fertilizer companies are price gouging. The Secretary of Agriculture says the White House is studying all possible measures to control costs. The Trump administration is issuing $12 billion in agricultural aid, but the Corn Growers Association did the math. This money breaks down to about $44 per acre of corn, while the cost to plant an acre of corn is about $900. It's a drop in the bucket. As for finding alternative suppliers, some suggested importing fertilizer from Venezuela, others said to relax sanctions on Belarus. Analysts believe restoring Venezuela's fertilizer infrastructure requires billions in investment, not a short-term fix. Belarus's capacity is small, so lifting sanctions has almost no impact on the supply chain. Put simply, there's no quick solution. Just in the last 2 days, the official White House Twitter account posted a series of tweets celebrating national agricultural states, featuring cartoon farms from Animal Crossing, titled, "Make American Farming Great Again." They even launched a website called onlyfarms.gov. Yes, you read that right, mocking that other site. There are over 2,000 comments and millions of views. You can check the comments yourself, they are appalling. I won't take screenshots so you don't say I'm taking things out of context. I won't judge if this move is good or bad. I'll just put these two scenes side by side. On one hand, a Tennessee farmer says, "I spent $100,000 more on fertilizer, and I've already done this for 2 years." On the other hand, the White House is posting cartoon farm memes. You make sense of this picture. Some extreme reactions include farmers choosing to reduce fertilizer use to cut costs. What does reducing nitrogen fertilizer mean? Yields drop directly. A farmer from Missouri, vice chairman of the National Corn Growers Association, said, "Fertilizer is like an energy drink for crops. If you don't give them enough, yields will suffer." Quote, "Planting less or not fertilizing enough leads to the same result. This fall's harvest will be lower than expected." Here's a quick question. Do you know the relationship between gasoline and corn? And this consequence won't stay in the US, it will spread worldwide. But before it spreads worldwide, there is one number I need to clarify. Don't think US food supply doesn't matter. The US is the world's largest corn exporter and a major soybean exporter. If US food production drops, global prices will rise. Let's look at what's happening elsewhere in the world. India, one of the world's largest rice exporters, accounted for about a quarter of global rice exports in 2024. India's fertilizer demand is massive, and its main planting season is Kharif, starting in June, over 2 months away, but preparations must begin now. The shutdown of fertilizer factories means that if the war continues until late April or early May without recovery, there will be a fertilizer shortage for India's June planting. An International Food Policy Research Institute researcher in New Delhi said farmers are already getting nervous. Brazil, the world's top soybean exporter, accounts for nearly 60% of global exports. Brazil relies heavily on imported fertilizers, especially raw materials from the Gulf region. Brazil's growing seasons are out of sync with the Northern Hemisphere, but fertilizer must be purchased and shipped months in advance. If the global fertilizer market remains tight in the coming months, Brazil's costs for the next season will soar, and the likelihood of production cuts will rise. Global edible oil, soybean meal, and feed prices will all follow suit. Next is a case study that left a deep impression on me, Egypt. Egypt is the world's largest wheat importer, importing over 13 million tons annually to feed its 108 million people. About two-thirds of them, over 70 million people, rely on government-subsidized bread to get by. For an 80-gram flatbread, the government-subsidized price is 0.2 pounds, roughly 3 US cents. You might ask, how cheap is that? How high is the subsidy? The answer is that production costs are 6 to 7 times the selling price. Bread subsidies cost the government about $3 billion annually. The subsidy is not just welfare, it is a tool for maintaining stability. On March 10th, Egypt was forced to raise domestic fuel prices due to rising global oil prices, with increases of 10% to 17%. Immediately after, the government set a maximum price for non-subsidized bread, forbidding price hikes, because they know all too well what happens if bread prices spiral out of control. In 1977, Egypt attempted to cut bread subsidies, leading to riots in the streets, dozens of deaths, and the government eventually emergency withdrawing the decision. In 2011, when global food prices soared, Egyptians took to the streets. The loudest slogan in the marches was, "Bread, freedom, social justice." And then, the regime at that time fell. In Egypt, bread is not just food. In many developing nations, bread is the bottom line for political stability. Here's a more extreme example. In 2021, the president of Sri Lanka made a decision to completely ban synthetic fertilizers and forcefully promote organic farming. To what extent was this decision absurd? It was not a gradual transition, but an immediate stop. Chemical fertilizers were banned nationwide instantly. The result? Tea production plummeted. Tea is Sri Lanka's largest export commodity. Rice production dropped, farmers went bankrupt, food shortages occurred, prices skyrocketed, foreign exchange reserves were exhausted, the economy collapsed, and the president fled. The president escaped by boat. A researcher at the Carnegie Foundation cited a case in an article and made a statement, saying that without synthetic fertilizers, some scholars believe the global population could only be one quarter of what it is now. Sri Lanka actively gave up on fertilizer and ruined themselves. The current situation is that many countries aren't giving it up voluntarily, but are being passively cut off. The results may not be as extreme, but the direction of impact is the same. Less fertilizer, lower production, higher food prices, the poor suffer first, and the risk of social instability rises. Who benefits from a more chaotic world? You might remember the Russia-Ukraine conflict in 2022, where global food and fertilizer prices spiked, and that shock already made it hard for many developing nations to breathe. A scholar from the foundation recently said something. They said, "Honestly, I feel this is more serious than 2022. Why is it more serious? Because in 2022, the Strait of Hormuz was open. Fertilizer from Gulf countries could be exported normally. The impact was mainly on Russian and Belarusian fertilizer exports. But this time, Hormuz is also blocked, which is equivalent to the wound from the last crisis not having fully healed, and now getting stabbed in the same spot again. And this cut hits a larger supply. Just the fertilizer passing through the strait accounts for a third of global trade." Look at another figure. After the price crisis in 2022, fertilizer usage and crop yields in African countries like Côte d'Ivoire, Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa showed a significant decline. These already fragile economies have the lowest capacity to resist shocks. If they repeat the same mistake this time, these countries will be the first and deepest hit again. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization listed the most impacted countries in South Asia, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, in East Africa, Sudan, Kenya, Somalia, in the Middle East, Turkey, and Jordan. If you have friends in agriculture, import-export trade, or who follow food prices, you can forward this video to them. These figures might directly impact their costs and judgments for the coming year. Alright, having said this, viewers might ask, "I understand the fertilizer problem, but is there anything else?" Yes, and it might be more serious. This issue has not been reported by any Chinese language media. Everyone's attention is focused on urea because it's the most used fertilizer, its price is rising the fastest, and the headlines are the most shocking. But Bloomberg published a very important article on March 21st, with a headline roughly meaning, "The fertilizer shock is expanding to a new area, and this area is called phosphate fertilizer." Like I just said, many farmers switched from corn to soybeans to avoid nitrogen fertilizer price hikes. Soybeans don't need nitrogen, right? But they need phosphorus. Many farmers switched, only to find phosphorus supply is also having issues. There's a little-known industrial detail here. Producing phosphorus fertilizer requires a massive amount of sulfur. And what is sulfur? It's a byproduct of processing most oil and natural gas. When you refine crude oil, you strip the sulfur out, and industrial sulfur is what you get. 45% of the global sulfur capacity is concentrated in the Gulf nations. That 45% figure is the highest percentage of all materials blocked in that strait, even higher than urea's 35%. The CEO of Keytrade put it bluntly, if 45% of the sulfur is gone, then someone is not going to get enough sulfur to produce DAP and MAP. Saudi Arabia is a major exporter of phosphate, but it's also blocked in that strait. As for China, it's a major phosphorus producer itself, but Beijing started restricting fertilizer exports last year, continuing until this August. The goal is simple. Save it for their own farmers. Because to quote an analyst, don't count on China to be the savior this time. China has its own agenda. So, the global sources of phosphorus are now limited to Russia and Morocco. For American buyers, purchasing from Russia is politically complicated, and buying from Morocco is limited in volume. The situation can be summarized in one sentence. Farmers are fleeing rising nitrogen prices to plant soybeans, but soybeans need phosphorus, and phosphorus is also running out. Blocked on both sides. It's not over yet. Add in a surprise in the US itself. You might not have noticed over the past few weeks, but if you follow me on X, you surely saw it. Nebraska has been on fire for the last 3 weeks. First, the Mal fire burned 640,000 acres, just barely contained, but today two new fires broke out. The Ashby fire burned 60,000 acres, and the Minor fire burned 15,000 acres, forcing emergency evacuations of two villages. In just 3 weeks, nearly 900,000 acres of pasture have been scorched, an area larger than Rhode Island. The governor has already extended the statewide burn ban until April 10. Nebraska is the number two cattle state in the U.S. With massive pastures burned, fences destroyed, and stored hay gone, the cattle have nowhere left to graze. Combined with 70% of the state's grazing land experiencing varying degrees of drought, moving them to another state won't be easy. Some ranchers say recovery could take 1 to 3 years. U.S. beef prices were already hitting records, and this fire interrupts expansion plans, meaning beef will only get more expensive in the short term. Plus, this Valero refinery in Texas exploded last week. The fire is out and there were no casualties, but this 380,000 barrel per day refinery has been forced to shut down, with multiple core units damaged. With the global energy supply chain already stretched to the limit, the shutdown of a major refinery on U.S. soil will only make market nerves tighter. Viewed individually, these events wouldn't change the global landscape, but when layered together, the picture looks different. Fertilizer shortages choking supply, 900,000 acres of pasture burned, with new fires still burning today, and the refinery shut down. The global food and energy supply chains are under pressure in multiple places simultaneously, with each point adding composite stress to an already tight supply chain. Finally, the last question, and the one everyone cares about, is when all of this will affect you, and when it will affect your wallet. Let's map out a timeline. It is now late March 2026, and fertilizer price hikes and shortages are happening. This stage affects farmers and distributors, while ordinary consumers won't feel it yet. Next, from April to June is spring planting in the Northern Hemisphere. If fertilizer is still not in place or insufficient, planted acreage decreases, fertilizer application is inadequate, and this year's yield is basically locked in. You won't notice anything in the supermarket in April, but the bottom line numbers are already changing. When the autumn 2026 harvest data comes out, if production cuts are confirmed, food futures prices will react first, with corn, soybean, and wheat futures markets likely rising first. In the first half of 2027, the food price increase propagates to food processing, logistics, and retail, and the price changes you feel on supermarket shelves will likely appear around this time. Bread, edible oils, chicken, and beef, which are most sensitive to fertilizer and feed costs, will rise first. Today, I'm predicting this to you on this channel a year in advance. Are we spreading anxiety, or are we letting you prepare? This propagation isn't a random guess. It's based on specific estimates. The chief economist at Wolf Research made a projection. If fertilizer and supply chain disruptions continue, U.S. household food inflation could rise by an additional 2 percentage points, on top of the approximately 0.4 percentage points brought about by energy price hikes. CNBC reports also cite judgments from economists familiar with the fertilizer industry. If this disruption continues, the propagation of costs to consumers will be more severe than anything we have seen before. You can simply understand this to mean that next year, when you go to the supermarket to buy the same things, the bill could be significantly higher. And this time is different from before. In the past, when prices rose, supermarkets and brands would absorb part of it, not passing it entirely to consumers. But this time, energy, fertilizer, and transportation costs are rising simultaneously. Every link in the chain has no profit margin left to absorb it. Everyone has to pass it down. For the macroeconomy, this inflationary pressure gives the Fed more headaches. Some trades in the market are already discussing scenarios deemed impossible a few months ago, specifically raising rates in 2026. The chief economist at Firm Name says that if oil prices stay high for weeks rather than months, a recession is hard to avoid. If food inflation is added on top, The Fed is stuck in the middle. Cutting rates exacerbates inflation, while raising rates pushes the economy into a recession. What does this mean for us as investors? Let's first talk about a few sectors that benefit. If you follow the fertilizer industry, the logic for several companies is very clear. CF Industries, the largest nitrogen producer in the US, uses domestically priced Henry Hub natural gas, making its costs far lower than overseas competitors using imported LNG. When there is a global shortage, they have production capacity and a cost advantage, allowing them to capture scarcity premiums. Nutrien in Canada is the world's largest integrated fertilizer company, while Mosaic is the leader in US phosphate and potash. The logic for these three is the same: a global industrial shortage, relatively secure North American capacity, and soaring prices mean their profits are highest. Now looking at the losing side, European fertilizer companies are having a hard time. European natural gas was already several times more expensive than in the US, and now the Asian LNG benchmark price has risen 50% in 2 weeks. European fertilizer factories cannot operate and must compete with Asian buyers. Downstream food processing companies' profits will also be squeezed. Raw materials have risen, but supermarkets are fighting price wars and won't let you raise prices, making it difficult for the intermediate processors. Another often overlooked but important area is emerging markets. Countries that rely heavily on imported food and fertilizer, such as Egypt, Pakistan, and Bangladesh, will see their trade deficits widen and downward pressure on their currencies rise. In 2022, Sri Lanka collapsed under this exact pressure. If this crisis lasts longer and covers more ground, it is not impossible for debt issues to arise in certain fragile economies. For investors in emerging markets, this is a risk dimension that needs close attention. Another type of company worth noting is agricultural technology. Precision fertilization techniques, biological nitrogen fixation technology, and even green ammonia, which uses renewable energy instead of natural gas to produce ammonia. Before the crisis, these directions were just concepts on PowerPoint slides. Once crises become the norm, the willingness of governments and capital to invest in these areas changes completely. In the long run, this could be a structural shift. However, bear in mind that this is long-term logic, not short-term trading. If you want to track the follow-up developments of this matter, I will give you three key signals. First, watch the price of NOLA urea. NOLA is the pricing center for imported urea in the US Gulf Coast. Urea is now over $650 per ton. If it breaks $800, it indicates that supply chain recovery is hopeless, and the crisis is worsening. Second, watch the USDA Prospective Plantings Report on March 31st. This report will tell you how much corn and soybeans US farmers intend to plant this year. If the decrease in corn acreage is greater than the USDA's February forecast, the probability of future grain price increases is higher. This report might be the most important agricultural data for the next month. Third, watch the navigation status of the Strait of Hormuz. The situation changes very quickly, so I won't elaborate because what I say today might be obsolete tomorrow. You only need to remember one structural fact: the strait has already been effectively blockaded for a month, with 2,000 ships and 20,000 crew members stranded. Even if a ceasefire is announced tomorrow, the physical aspects, clearing mines, restoring insurance, rescheduling fleets, and restarting fertilizer factories, will take at least 4 to 6 weeks combined. The researcher from the Carnegie Foundation put it well: farmers in the Northern Hemisphere do not have those 4 to 6 weeks. This crisis has exposed a deeper structural problem. The efficiency of the global food system is not as high as we imagined. About one-third of the food produced for humans is ultimately wasted. Nearly 40% of arable land is not used to grow food for humans, but feed for livestock. A cow needs 50 calories of feed to produce 1 calorie of beef. One-third of corn in the US is not used for food, but for ethanol fuel. When fertilizer is abundant, these inefficient links are hidden by high yields. Once fertilizer is scarce, the system's fragility is exposed. For spring planting, every day matters. A delay today could mean a reduced harvest in the autumn. So, to summarize the core judgment today, everyone is watching oil prices, but if oil prices rise, you can drive less or go out less. If food prices rise, you cannot eat less. Fertilizer is the most fragile, least buffered, and most overlooked link in this chain. Supermarket prices for 2027 are being written right now. As the saying goes, oil prices dictate fertilizer costs, and spring planting dictates the supermarket bill you pay in the fall. How long do you think it will take for price volumes to impact your daily expenses? 3 months, 6 months, or has it already begun? Let me know your assessment in the comments. After watching my video, are you more anxious, or does careful consideration make you feel more secure by being prepared for the future? Discuss how you are planning and preparing in the comments section. If you find this deep analysis of mainstream anxieties valuable, please remember to like, follow, and recommend my content. Once the fertilizer prices and USDA planting data are out, I will immediately assess, analyze, and share them with everyone. I am Aren. Watch and then subscribe. See you in the next video.